Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And welcome to the second hour of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studios. Jeff Palermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the Executive Editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the Editor, Glenn Gilbo. Andre Champagne, our producer tonight, who also does great work for Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Rag Radio. Coming up a little bit later on, Caroline Fenton will join us, talk some women's hoops with her, but let's bring in a member of the coaching staff for the LSU women's basketball team, Jill Schwartz. Lady Tigers getting ready to play Duke in the Sweet 16 on Friday night at 9 o'clock. Going to be a late one for LSU fans to watch this one coming up on Friday from Sacramento. Jill, thanks a lot for being a part of the show tonight. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank y'all for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you on. What a performance this past weekend to really jump on both of those teams early, never really give them an opportunity to get into the game. I mean, could you have played any better than what you played in those first two games of this NCAA tournament?
Well, it was a fun weekend in the PMAC. It was a great atmosphere. And one thing we always talk about early in the season when we set our goals for the year is finishing in the top part of our league, so we have the opportunity to host those first two games at home. Give yourself an opportunity to play in front of a home crowd who we think is one of the best home crowds in all of women's college basketball. So check that goal off, and then when you get to those two games at home, just like you said, you want to put those teams away early, leave them no hope, and I think we did just that. Starting with the Jacksonville game on Friday afternoon, I think we did a really good job of executing offensively. Our defense was very, very good. And, you know, some people who don't know much about basketball probably look and say, oh, 2 versus 15, this should be a blowout. But go look at the other scores across the bracket, and you're not seeing massive blowouts like ours was. And then for us to follow it up on Sunday afternoon in front of a packed house, with a great crowd, great atmosphere, another 50-point win against a really, really good Texas Tech team. It was special. We got a lot of work to do this week, but obviously it's nice to still be one of the 16 teams playing right now. And even though we've got to adapt to the time change and sit around for a few days, there's other options that other teams have, and that is being at home, not playing. So the fact that we're still playing right now and playing really good basketball on both ends of the floor is really exciting.
Hey, Joe, this is Andre. I know y'all were on fire scoring-wise, but that wouldn't have been possible without the defense that y'all played this weekend. So talk about that defensive effort that you saw this weekend from the ladies.
I think the biggest key to our defense this weekend was being intentional, and that started in practice. One thing about the NCAA tournament is, when you finish your SEC tournament, you got a full week of nothing. And you take a couple of days off, you get back on the practice court, and you work on yourself. And we were working on ball screen defense. We were working on different game situations. We were working on executing in the half court, running in transition, just all the little things about ourselves that needed to be touched up and fixed after the SEC tournament. So then you have Selection Sunday, you find out who you're going to be matched up with and what that first round game and then if you're fortunate enough to win the first round game, what that second game could look like. And so we broke it down into really three parts after Selection Sunday. We actually worked on Texas Tech the Monday and Tuesday after the selection show, just to, if chalk held, knowing that Texas Tech was a higher seed, that's who we would play. And then on Wednesday, we worked on Villanova because they were Texas Tech's opponent. Thursday, we presented the scouting report on Jacksonville and worked on Jacksonville. And then Friday, we beat Jacksonville. So it wasn't raining when Noah built his ark. You've got to be prepared for what other teams may throw at you. And we had enough confidence in our team that we were going to take care of business against Jacksonville. And we wanted to be prepared for anything and everything that Texas Tech or Villanova had to offer. And obviously, after a big win on Friday, you can't do much on the practice court on Saturday. You can walk through, you can watch film, but you can't have a 2 or 3 hour practice. And so we got a lot of work done in the film room. And then, man, Sunday, we came out guns blazing from the tip. I think we started 10-0, and we took Texas Tech out of everything they did on the offensive end. Now, they threw in a couple threes or a couple questionable calls that led to some free throws early on, but Texas Tech's a good team, and they had some really good wins in the Big 12 this year, and they beat some good teams in non-conference. So we knew that we were going to have a game on our hands if we didn't come out ready to play. And, man, it was a sight to see. Just defensively holding a team like Texas Tech to 47 points was their season low. Talking on defense, communicating with each other, communicating with the coaching staff on matchups, and then just the level of execution, ball screen defense, transition defense. It all starts with defense, because as you go out to California now, you hope your offense travels, but the only chance that we can really count on winning or having a chance to win these next two games is our defense. We hope we make shots, but you got to control what you can control, and that starts on the defensive end. And I think we're really locked in right now. Our players are in a good place, and I think just a high level of excitement, knowing that, like I said, we're one of the last 16 teams remaining, and we feel like we still have some work to do.
Yeah, and just kind of sticking with that defensively, that defense leads to transition buckets, which is, you know, the bread and butter of Coach Mulkey's philosophy. So I guess talk about what have you seen from this team's ability to score in transition and how that compares to years prior that you've been here in Baton Rouge. It just feels like this year they're really able to run.
Well, I think a lot of that comes with our guards and committing to running. I think in years past, we've had some really dominant post play with Angel and Anissa, and we like to work through the post. Now, don't get me wrong, we still like to run our offense through our post. We've got to have good post play to have a chance to win games. But when you don't have to run offense and set up in the half court, it's so much more exciting, and it allows your guards to do what they do best, and that's get out and run and make layups and showtime. I mean, we call ourselves the show, and it's not to boast or brag about who we are. It's literally our style of play. It's behind-the-back passes. It's running out after a long rebound. It's 1 through 4 players bringing it up the court, and it allows us to, one, have other teams on their heels, because when you've got someone like Jada or Malaysia pushing the ball up the floor, and then wings like Flage, Michaela, Bella running, it gets you easy opportunities to score or get to the free throw line. And I think that's one thing that needs to be highlighted as well. The past two games were plus 23 and plus 17 from the free throw line. And if you're getting to the foul line that much and making them, I think we shot 83% in the first round and 92 or 93% in the second round. Like, if you're making and shooting that many free throws, you're going to look up at the end of the game and you're going to be pretty happy with what you see on that scoreboard.
Yeah, and usually, Joe, in the NCAA tournament, upperclassmen leadership is crucial, right? So with Flage and Michaela heating up, can you talk about how crucial it is for both of them to be efficient kind of moving forward, especially during this weekend against, you know, possibly, you know, obviously Duke is a team that's been here before. They've had tournament experience, and then, you know, just the possibility of playing another team. You know, I don't want to look too far down the line, but you do have to look forward to playing UCLA or whoever they may take on. But just talk about, I think y'all are 7-1 in games that they score 15 plus. So just talk about those two and how crucial they are going to be this weekend.
Well, they're going to be very crucial, and I think they've made a concerted effort to really take over the locker room from a leadership standpoint One, because they've been there, and two, because that's just how bad they want to win, and they're true competitors, and they don't want to see this thing end with a loss. And you know what? There's still some really, really good teams out there, but we can't worry about what's going on in the other three regions. We've got to take care of our region, and that starts with Duke, like you said. And the two of them, we go as they go. And Flage has been a great leader this year, and being able to pull Michaela with her and basically say, hey, I'm on this last ride with you, but I got to get you ready for your last ride, which is next year. And I think the conversations that Flage and Michaela have in the film room, team meetings, going to dinner with the team, just making sure the chemistry this time of year is at an all-time high is the most important thing. We know how talented the two of those are, and if you can get them to be productive, but also bring some players with them. I thought our freshmen played so well this weekend, and that was important for them to not only gain some NCAA tournament confidence, but it allows Flage and Michaela to look up now as we get out to California and say, hey, our freshmen are ready. We got dogs on our team, and we recruited these kids to play in games like this. We recruited Zakiya Johnson and Grace Knox to bang with the best post and to run. They can guard down low. They can rebound. But what teams aren't going to be ready for is how quickly they get up and down the court. And they've got so much room for growth. But their ability to just follow Michaela and Flage is special. And I think, like you were talking about Flage and Michaela scoring, yeah, that's important when they're scoring. We're not relying on them to score. What their scoring does is force teams to make decisions. And there's some hard decisions to make when Flage's got 15, Michaela's got 15, Jada's got 10, Kate has 8, Grace has 6. Like, we've got so many options, and you got to pick and choose who you're going to try and stop. And when we're all clicking, I think you can see how dangerous this team can be. And it starts, like you said, with Flage and Michaela.
Yeah, that's a great point. And just as we have kind of 2 minutes here, just to kind of wrap up, I guess looking forward to this weekend, Joe, what ways has this Duke team improved since y'all played them in December?
Well, I think the one thing is from a confidence standpoint. I think that bigger than anything, after we beat them up there, they rolled off 17 wins in a row. And they win the ACC. They win the ACC tournament. They're playing good basketball right now. But I think the biggest thing is we've got to be us. I think you go back and look at that Duke game, we didn't start great. We got down 17-4, and we turned the ball over a lot. We weren't taking good shots to start the game. So I think a lot of that's keeping our composure, and you've got to know that Duke's going to be extremely motivated. I think Duke thinks they let one slip away, and with a slow start in an elite or in a Sweet 16 game, you don't want to give a team the opportunity to put you away early. Luckily, we were able to come back and beat Duke in that game up there. But I think it's just a high level of respect for each team. Duke's a very good team. They're good defensively. They get out and run. You watch their more recent games. Their transition offense is very good. People want to say that Duke can't score. Well, go watch some tape on them because they get up and down better than most teams. And we're going to have to be good defensively, especially in transition. But Duke shoots some threes. I think they make 6 a game, shoot about 19. So we got to expect some long rebounds on missed shots and get out and run. So I think a lot of it is having a high level of respect for Duke and their players and then doing what we do and see if we can't put ourselves in a position to make it to an Elite Eight game and potentially play to go to a Final Four.
Yeah, just about a minute left here, Joe. Just real quick, in your eyes, what are the biggest keys to beating this team the second time around? I know you kind of talked about it, but that rebounding, it really does seem like that's going to be a really important aspect here, especially I think they had 8 offensive boards against y'all last matchup, but since they do shoot the three and they have Fournier, who's really, really good down low, just talk about that real quick.
I think, like you said, it's rebounding, it's taking care of the ball, limiting their second chance shot opportunities and their second chance points. And then, like we always talk about, getting to the foul line. I think we're deep. We've got a deep bench, and we've got kids that can go. And if we get into their bench, I think we're going to like the outcome of the game. But we've got to be aggressive. We can't be passive. We can't expect the game just to go. We've got to set the tone early. It's going to be like a boxing match. That's what we like to kind of relate these things to. It's going to be a four-round boxing match, and you got to throw punches, you got to take punches, you got to get up, and then hopefully at the end of the quarters, you look up and you've won enough quarters or rounds to advance. So I think taking care of the ball, rebounding, and just being who we are, playing with a level of intensity, and just having fun with it, enjoying the moment, and like Flage said, like, you don't know how many more of these you're going to get, and we never take these for granted. Four straight Sweet 16s, and hopefully a chance to move on to an Elite Eight and then potentially a Final Four.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. We really appreciate your time tonight here on Tiger Rag Radio. Best of luck to you and the ladies out west this weekend here in Sacramento.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me. I know it's a late game, so either drink some coffee, stay up late. It's going to be fun. I'm excited for it, and I know our Tiger fans who aren't making the trip out west are definitely going to enjoy watching us on TV. And the good news is I think it's an early game on Sunday if we're able to advance.
Great insight as always, Joe. Thank you very much, man.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all.
Big thanks to LSU assistant coach Joe Schwartz. We're going to be back here after this break here from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. This is Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... With multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne, who is our producer tonight and also covers LSU women's basketball for Tiger Rag. Don't forget, if you missed any part of the show, talked a lot of spring football in hour number one, some baseball talk, talking a lot of women's basketball here in hour number two. You can find us anywhere you get your podcast. Look for the Tiger Rag Radio podcast. Please subscribe to it as well. Also, the show gets uploaded to YouTube about 30 minutes after we get off the airwaves here, so you can check us out there. And then, of course, if you're not near a station that is carrying us as we're live from 6 to 8 on Tuesday nights, you can always go to Tiger Rag's website, find the link to listen to us at TigerRag.com. LSU and Duke at 9 o'clock on Friday night. I haven't looked at the other matchups. I mean, did they have to put an East Coast team on at 9 o'clock at night?
Well, since UCLA is basically a home game for them, essentially, they'll play the earlier game, which
will
be 6:30 Pacific time.
Who's UCLA playing?
They'll play Minnesota.
Yeah. They beat by like 28 points earlier this year,
yeah,
or something like that?
23, I believe.
That was one of the things. I know there was a 2 seed that lost in this tournament, but it's amazing to
Iowa.
Iowa, that's right. In double overtime too, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, to Samaya Smith.
Yeah.
Former LSU tournament.
Yeah. But it was amazing to see. Not amazing. Too strong of a word. But it was crazy, I guess, to see the lopsided scores involving the 1 and 2 seeds playing in the second round. I mean, they're winning these games by 40 points.
Yeah, and honestly, like, LSU beat Texas Tech, a team that was pretty good this year, and I think that just shows you what the gap really is in women's basketball right now with what NIL is and what it's gotten to.
Well, I would imagine there's only a handful of schools, and it's the schools that are your 1 and 2 seeds that are putting any kind of source of significant dollars towards the program, and they got the best players, and it's hard for – now there's competitive matchups between these 4 and 5 seeds in the 3 and 6 games, but when you get to the 1 versus 8 or the 2 versus 7, other than that Iowa game, it's blowout city. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, they're just crushing these teams. So, but Friday night, what kind of game are we looking at here?
I think it'll be a battle in the paint. I think that's what this one's going to come down to. Both teams shot better than 50% in last matchup, which was in December, and both teams are very different now. LSU can still score at will, but Duke is going to really focus on playing better defense. They're only allowing about 55 points a game since that matchup, which is pretty interesting. And in the first matchup, both teams turned the ball over 18 and 19 times. That's we're going to see probably that go down. I would say half. That'll be half of that. But I think LSU, they dominated the first game in the paint. They beat Duke 52-36 in paint points. Kate Koval really had a great game in that first game. So did Amaya Joyner. They match up better against this Duke team than they really did against any of the first-round teams they played. Duke does have a little more height than the first two teams that they played. I think their tallest players are 6'4". Kate Koval is 6'5". So just a better matchup, I would say. But Duke does have some very physical post players and Toby Fournier. And,
yeah.
That'll be the biggest challenge, is keeping her at bay and really winning that rebound battle.
So Fournier is really the key, though, for Duke. I'm gleaning.
Yeah, 6'2". She's like a point forward. You know how Zion was it's kind of crazy, but they're bringing point forwards over there. Zion was a point forward at Duke in his time, and Fournier can run the court. She can play guard, but she's gonna most likely beat you down low.
Averaging 17 points a game, shooting 53% from the floor. LSU Duke, 9 o'clock on Friday night. We're going to take another break here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. And when we come back, Caroline Fenton from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll talk more about the women's basketball tournament with her, get into some other topics as well. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. While I'm a fourth generation rice and soybean grower, you don't have to be a farmer to be a Louisiana Farm Bureau member. Membership has its benefits, from discounts on car seats, hotel rooms, and rental cars, to access to insurance you can count on to be there when you need, plus a whole lot more. We're 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, Andre Champagne, our producer tonight, and we bring in our next guest as we continue the women's basketball talk. That's Caroline Fenton of Yahoo Sports. Caroline, how you doing tonight? I hope you're enjoying March Madness.
Oh, my gosh. How could you not be enjoying March Madness? I mean, March has been marching. The madness has been madnessing, both on the men's and the women's side. We get a Cinderella in the women's tournament this year. 10-seed Virginia going to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2000. So it's all great over here. We're not sleeping a lot, but that's fine. We'll sleep next month.
And LSU fans are not going to be sleeping on Friday night. They got to stay up late to watch the Lady Tigers and Duke. How do you see this matchup?
I love this matchup. And what this has been, and I will take my purple and gold tinted glasses off when I say this on Yahoo Sports, but even if I wasn't an LSU alum, even if I wasn't a diehard LSU fan, this would be my number one game to watch this weekend. It for a couple of reasons. Duke LSU is unstoppable force versus immovable object. I mean, this LSU backcourt with Mikayla Williams and Flaje Johnson, the way that LSU's been able to score. I mean, LSU's, you know, putting up 100 points per game almost like it's their job. And you turn around and you look at Duke, a team that has really, you know, made its reputation in playing hard-nosed defense. Duke wants to play you in a phone booth. Duke wants to keep it within, you know, like a 55 to 53 type of game. They want to keep things low scoring. That's what they do best. So that's one. It's kind of, it's a clash of styles. It's a clash of head coaches. You know, Carol Lawson and Kim Mulkey, although they, I do think they are, you know, cut from the same cloth in terms of their toughness, in terms of dedication to what they do. They just have two very different coaching styles. So two, you know, just different teams stylistically, two different teams in philosophy, two different teams in the way that they want to play basketball games and the way they want to win basketball games. But also because it's a rematch of what we got in December. Duke and LSU played before they got into conference play. And it, obviously that went LSU's way. Flage absolutely went off in that game. You could tell it meant a little something extra to her. You could tell that she was definitely fueled by her experience having Carol Lawson as a head coach in USA basketball. But this matchup, well, that was a great matchup. Well, that was a fun game. While LSU fans should be should feel encouraged by the outcome of that game, this matchup feels wildly different because I think the Duke is playing much, much better basketball, much more consistent basketball than they were in December. I mean, LSU shot 60% from the field in that game. Duke is not going to let LSU shoot 60% from the field. Duke has really upgraded and elevated their defensive game throughout the course of ACC play. But on the other side, LSU is a better defensive team too. I mean, Duke shot 50% from the field in that matchup, and Duke is not a good enough offensive team to let them shoot 50% from the field. So while we've seen this matchup before, it does feel different because both of these teams have evolved so much throughout the course of the last 3 months.
Caroline, that was a great analysis. I want to tell you, I mean that sincerely. As you were talking, I was playing the game through my mind, and I see LSU winning by 16. So that's what I saw as you were talking.
16 is awfully specific. Is there a reason why it's 16?
Because it's sweet.
It is sweet. Fair point. Very fair point.
But no, realistically, if LSU does make it out of that, they're probably going to be playing UCLA, a rematch of last year where UCLA defeated LSU in the Elite Eight. UCLA stacked. They're arguably the best team in the country right now, along with UConn probably. What do you think would happen if LSU does make it into a contest again with UCLA?
I can absolutely see LSU beating UCLA. And I don't want to disrespect UCLA. Look, I understand UCLA only lost one game in the regular season. I understand that UCLA won their conference championship by 50 points. Let that sink in for a second. A conference tournament championship game by 50 points in what is, I think, the Big Ten is rivaled only by the SEC in level of depth and level of competition. But UCLA is just a really difficult team to trust. UCLA is a team that's been here before. Look, they were in the Final Four last season. Gabby Hawkes, Kiki Rice, Lauren Betts, there's three leading scorers and their core on their team. They're all seniors. Like, they've all been here before, and I think they all understand at UCLA, if it's not now, then when? When will Corey Close, the head coach at UCLA, have a squad this prepared and this ready to make a run for a national championship? It'll be their first in program history. But it feels like they get off to slow starts. It feels like at times they can shoot themselves in the foot. And while I don't think, clearly, LSU doesn't have anyone size-wise to match up with a 6'7" Lauren Betts, nobody in America has anyone to match up with Lauren Betts. What I do think LSU has is a certain level of physicality, a certain level of speed, and a certain level of shooting that if all of those things click, if Flage is having an on day, because we've seen Flage not be 100%, have some off days or at least off times in critical moments, in critical matchups, in big-time matchups, if she steps up big, if Mylesia Fuller-Wiley has one of her games where she's good for 20 to 25 points off the bench, I think LSU can absolutely beat UCLA and get to the Final Four, but it's going to have to be with Flage and Mylesia both playing up to their peak, because we've seen both of them kind of falter and step back and play short of what we've seen them be able to do and play short of expectations. But if those two are hitting and if those two are firing in the right cylinders, like we've seen them do throughout the course of the tournament, I think LSU can beat UCLA. They're not an unbeatable team like it looks like UConn might be.
Caroline, this is Kim Mulkey's best team at LSU, period. Better than 2023, true or false?
Ooh, that's a really great question. I'm going to lean false just because, you know, that team had Angel Reese and this team doesn't. And I don't think that you can underrate or underestimate how big it was to have Angel Reese's presence in the paint, Angel Reese protecting the rim.
The swagger.
Fact that Angel Reese was good for a double-double on any given night. The swagger.
The swagger is what the killer instinct that this team has lacked in the close games this season. Angel didn't have time for that. they were going to win those kind of games, and they that's what they've missed. They're almost too nice of a team. You know, Flage is a great person. Michaela Williams is a great person. They don't have that killer instinct that Angel had.
Angel had an us against the world mentality.
Yes. Yes.
That I think is intoxicating in a locker room. I think everyone in the locker room can buy into that. Of, you know what? I don't care if they're not picking us. I don't care if we're not a one seed. I don't care what they're saying about us. All that matters is what we're doing in this locker room. Angel had that, I think, arguably better than anyone I've seen in recent memory in women's college basketball. Does this team have that same killer instinct? I think Mylaysia Fulwiley, we saw at South Carolina, and we've seen this season at LSU, she can be an absolute spark plug. That when she comes out on the floor, it feels like the rest of the team gets elevated. It's not the same level of maybe swagger or chip on her shoulder maybe that Angel had. She's not as vocal maybe as Angel was, but her presence on the court, like I can feel it watching games. It is palpable what she means to the rest of that squad, the way that she can energize the rest of that squad. So I would say if this team has that, it comes through Mylaysia.
And this is a real question. Can LSU, since they're going to be together on the road away from home, so far away from home in Sacramento, for these two games, can they develop that killer instinct, us against the world, because they're by themselves, isolated?
That's kind of what March is for, I think. I think the positive thing to point out, too, is not only is LSU on the road, you know, in a different time zone, Duke is too. Duke's got an even further road trip ahead of them. They're crossing three time zones where LSU is crossing two. None are easy feats, but at least not LSU is not alone there. But I think there's a level of swagger that you can carry with you from the tournament that I think is probably the source of a lot of great March Madness moments. I don't think St. Peter's went into the men's tournament just a couple of years ago thinking that, hey, we could get to the Elite Eight. But once you win one game and then another game and then another game and you're taking down some of the best teams in the country, you get this certain level of buy-in. I think I mentioned Virginia at the top. I think that Virginia is feeling that as well. Virginia was in the first four. Now they're the first four team ever to get to a Sweet 16. You don't think that they're kind of swaggy walking a little bit into, I believe they're in Fort Worth, wherever they are. You don't think they're swaggy walking into it? You don't think they're going into it with this feeling of invincibility? So while I don't think that you can completely change the culture of your locker room overnight, nor do you want to change the culture of your locker room on March 24th, I think what you can do is start to build up that us against the world mentality, because if you can't do it in March, when in the world can you do it?
Caroline, should be a fantastic weekend. Looking forward to it. Sweet 16, Elite Eight, some good basketball this weekend. We appreciate your time tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. It's a blast, and enjoy the game.
All right. Caroline Fenton from Yahoo Sports, one of our favorite guests here on Tiger Rag Radio. We'll take a break. More coming up from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Let's go. We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne. So while LSU was struggling at the plate on Friday, I was started to flip around, looked at what some other games were going on in the SEC, and saw the South Carolina, Arkansas score, and I was like, wow. This is like
22-4 or something like that.
This is just horrendous. This is horrible.
That's almost as bad as the game I called last night.
Who won that game, Bob?
Dunham won 20-0.
Oh my goodness.
They called it after two innings.
Two innings. Wow.
They didn't actually finish the second inning.
So you just knew. I mean, I didn't know. Well, Andre, you said that he wasn't going to make it to Baton Rouge, that they would fire him.
I did.
Yeah. So I didn't know it was going to happen after a game. I could see, like, after the weekend, let the weekend play out, but it was just so brutal, and they had already gotten swept the weekend before
by Florida,
and so it was just time to pull the plug on this. So Paul Menaria said he is done coaching for good.
You know what that feels like? That feels like when LSU gets beat that bad in A&M, that you cannot let Brian Kelly coach another game. That's kind of what that felt like.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, and this is why Ryan McGee is where he's at and I'm where I'm at. I thought Ryan McGee from ESPN summed it up very well as far as the tenure of Paul Menaria at South Carolina. This is what he tweeted 3 days ago. I hate to see Paul Menaria's time at South Carolina end the way it did because I've always liked him so much. The classiest of class acts and a Hall of Famer by any measure. But I'm also glad that it's over. That was hard to watch. And it was. It was hard to see them go through a really difficult season last year. And they had a decision to make even after the end of last season, whether to give him one more year. And then as you were watching this season unfold, it wasn't getting any better. And it's a shame to see a guy who had – a Hall of Fame career, is the one of the classiest coaches that you'll ever work with. This is how it ends. And I think when we look back at it, you know, this is just a little small blip on his career. What he did at LSU, it was still amazing. I know it was only one national championship, but the level of consistency was always there here at LSU.
But I read an article that Cokie Riley of the advocate.com wrote the other day. Yesterday, I guess it was.
Well, I think it was in today's paper, but it might have been published.
Right. Yeah. I think it was last night.
Yeah, it was online last night. But where he's talking to Menaria, and Menaria says what you just said. It's only an 80-game blip.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can't help, and this is not against Menaria, but I can't help but remember whenever he was
hired,
everybody was like, what?
Yeah. You know? There's two things that athletic directors have to do. They can't hire their friends, and they can't hire who the players want them to hire. Those are two mistakes athletic directors could always make. And, heck, we saw it with when Les Miles went to Kansas. I mean, it was almost kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, pull Les out of retirement. Les is enjoying himself, being a family guy, doing all these things. He had kind of built back his reputation in a way. He was in movies. He was doing all those kind of things. And then you bring him back to Kansas, and it goes awful. And this goes absolutely awful. And it's just, yeah, what were you thinking? I mean, this is a program that just won two back-to-back national championships, at least in recent history. It's not like it's not like they're just a horrible program.
No, they're the last team to win back-to-back national titles in 2010 and 2011. And the thing is Ray Tanner, who coached that team, was the AD at the time that hired Paul.
Yeah. Here is maybe the – I like villains in sports. I like tension. So I think here's the best – maybe the best news out of this. This means that Coastal Carolina's baseball coach could be the South Carolina coach next year.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Kevin Schnell.
Yeah. I think Kevin Schnell. I mean, why wouldn't they hire him?
That would be a great hire. Yeah.
And I mean, we're missing something now that, Tony V is in at the Giants. It's not the same.
Here's one thing I don't know though, if it's attractive to him, is the amount of money that they're pouring into that baseball program. Years prior, when they were as successful as they were. They were able to kind of spend a little more money. Now it seems as if the NIL collective over there is really just top heavy on women's basketball.
Could be. So wasn't that one of the programs that has been rumored where there's more revenue sharing going into it? Wasn't that one that you mentioned, Todd?
Yeah, their distribution is different than the 75, 15, 5, and 5 from what we think.
Understand. Yeah, but that's sure. Still only an extra million or whatever. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, South Carolina under Dawn Staley, the basketball program, loses about $6 million a year. They do make more money in terms of revenue than LSU. And so I would think that may warrant, in their minds, giving them a little bit more of the revenue share. But we don't know that for a fact. Yeah, that's right. Just rumor, gossip, and innuendo.
Yeah.
What we do know, in terms of more rumor, gossip, and innuendo, is that Dawn Staley runs the ship over there for the entire athletic department. And it'd be interesting to talk to to Paul one day and see what his thoughts are on that, if he would share them with us.
I think that would be a great idea.
Let's take our final break. This is Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
LSU Pro Day was on Monday. We'll end the show on this topic. Garrett Nussmeier was out there. Garrett Nussmeier looked healthy. Garrett Nussmeier, still probably a middle-round draft pick, though.
He completed, 69 of 72 passes.
And he
pass
should
attempts.
Against the air. Against air, you should be able to do
but
that.
But still, I mean, that's good. It shows, and like you said, it shows he's healthy. I understand that, he was competing head-to-head, basically, with Carson Beck for the number three quarterback to be taken in the draft.
Yeah. And
from what I hear, and I don't have any inside scoop or anything like that, but Carson Beck has the advantage over him for that number three. So that would push Nussmeier back to 4, and if you look at the draft needs, that means he's probably not going to go until the third day of the draft. But you never know.
You never know. There could be a team that believe, like the Saints believed in Tyler Shuck.
I could certainly see the Saints picking up Nussmeier. I really could.
I think
Rattler's going to be dealt soon.
I could see Arizona. I could see Pittsburgh. I could see teams like that.
Jets, maybe.
I hope not.
God bless him if he has to go there. there's already, speaking of that, there's already talk how the Mannings are going to make sure Arch does not go to the Jets. We're going to see the same thing we saw with Eli and making sure he didn't go to the Chargers, I think it was back then.
Yeah, that's who it was.
Yeah. But anyways, that's another topic. We got about a minute left. I guess I'm kind of ready, especially with spring football and Lane Kiffin. I'm just kind of done with the whole Garrett Nussmeier injury thing. More and more he lets out about it. I don't want to say it's excuse making, but it's – I'm just tired of it. That was such a letdown of a season, and obviously got screwed up on the second day of practice. And, it's just tough. I think he's a good kid. I just don't know how you hurt yourself throwing the football.
Pull the muscle.
That's not a good sign, in my opinion.
I think he was overworking.
That could have been it too. But
my question is, why does the coach cover it up and play him anyway?
that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, Tyrann Mathieu had some very interesting comments on that podcast, by the way.
The honey badger ate up Brian Kelly.
Yeah, he did.
That.
He did. All right, that does it for the show. We got to get out of here. This has been Tiger Rag Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll check you out next week.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at tigerrag.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.